Gata on opening the sutra.
The Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered even in billions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, yeah, I wrote this talk for today. So we'll do Fusatsu next, since it's a new month. But we'll do Fusatsu next Saturday. So that's the talk today. So here we sit at the beginning of August. However, as we Mainers know, the beginning of August is really not a fresh beginning. It is the beginning of the end. Alas, we are reminded that summer in Maine is only a brief flicker, a short 8 weeks, and we are now halfway. And to add insult to injury, the first four weeks alternated between weather that has been extremely hot and humid and very wet and soggy. Virtually every one of our precious weekends has been at least a partial washout. However, if we can step back, we can see that this is the truth of the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha being revealed to us in every moment. The core of the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, the first truth, was the reality of dukkha, sometimes translated as suffering. When Shakyamuni spoke of dukkha, he saw that it arose from our inability to come to terms with impermanence, which is the fundamental nature of this reality. Everything is impermanent. Nothing, even the entirety of the vast universe itself, cannot escape this truth. Of course, we humans resist when we like or love something or someone, we want to hold on it forever. We think and act as if forever is a real possibility. We talk about loving and being together forever as if that is a possibility, which is, of course, absurd, and yet is a trap we all slip into. So when the inevitable truth of impermanence is revealed, we feel loss, pain, sadness, grief, anger, frustration, all of the negative emotional states. Our plan, our agenda, our desire is being thwarted again. At this moment, we have a teacher who is dying. No matter how great our love and respect for her is, the progression of her illness and the inevitable tragic ending may be delayed for a short while, but ultimately they cannot be averted. One very human response under these circumstances is to avert our eyes or to enter a state of denial. Facing the reality head on can appear to be just too painful, more than we can bear. After all, we don't like those unpleasant negative emotions. However, the truth is that even if we practice Zen for our entire lifetime, those natural human responses will not be extinguished. They will, in fact, be enhanced. Enhanced? That is crazy, you may say. Isn't Zen all about equanimity, dwelling in nirvana, here amidst the muddy waters of samsara? Shouldn't we be able to get beyond those emotions? Perhaps, but I believe that the relationship between practice and negative emotions is often misunderstood. Zen is about experiencing our lives deeply in each moment. It isn't about escaping certain aspects of our life. It is about fully embracing the entirety. When happiness comes, we are equanimous about that. we simply dwell briefly in the happiness. When sadness and grief come, we are equanimous about that, being fully present without hesitation or reservation until those two pass. Ah, you may ask, what of the suffering? That doesn't sound like alleviating suffering. In fact, that is precisely alleviating our suffering. Because the cause of suffering is not the reality of impermanence per se, it is our attachments which cause us to resist impermanence. We must be present and accepting of the reality of this moment, whatever that reality is. When we care about someone, we should care fully and deeply, giving ourselves to that. When we lose someone, we should grieve fully and deeply, giving ourselves to that. Zen exhorts us to embrace every aspect of this life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. In the coming months, we need to be present to Margaret, to her condition, to her wants and her desires. We need to live fully with her, whether that is to celebrate moments of joy or to aid and comfort her in times of pain and suffering. When the time does come that she passes, we must allow ourselves to feel our pain and sorrow acutely. That is Zen, and that is how we should honor this great teacher who has given us so much. If we don't hold on to our negative states, just as surely as the clouds break up and the suns return, they will pass completely of their own. If we don't cling and resist, the process takes place naturally. That is the essence of the idea of Tao, the ever-changing flow of reality. Each state simply and naturally passes into another. The eternal alternation of yin and yang, of happiness and sadness, and so on. This is contrary to our American culture, which leads us to believe that we can find happiness, as if it is an object that we can acquire, and once acquired, hold on to forever. If we do the right things, we can live happily ever after, with our beautiful partner, our Snow White or Prince Charming, who will never get ill or age. All the while, we will have a great abundance of possessions, like the four-bay garage that holds our precious German-engineered carriages. Of course, there's no financial stress, as we live in abundance with our many toys in our McCastle on the hill. Freeing ourselves from the grip of this pernicious mythical reality, this collective dreamscape, is what Zen is all about. That is what we call waking up. We must wake up to the fact that this is an amazing life, an incredible journey, if we are willing to embrace and live with it all, knowing clearly that we are powerless. We are not in control. Many of us witnessed the last years of Steph's life. During that time, he could barely breathe. He needed increasingly large tanks of oxygen just to sit zazen. He was dying, and his life was fleeing from him day by day. He could have chosen to dwell on that. He had every right to be miserable, to grieve his enormous losses, to become depressed by the shackles that his illness imposed on him. Yet he pursued his role as a teacher with a level of energy and zeal that most of us who are healthy do not bring to our practice. He came to this Zendo and taught until 3 or 4 days before his death. Steph said several times that his greatest regret about his illness was that it caused him to focus on himself more than he wanted to. However, he continually worked to turn that around, to be there to serve others, the treetop sangha. That is true freedom, living unbounded in vast space, while confined by an illness that made just walking across the room a colossal struggle. To experience life this way, we must pay heed to the myriad of Dharma gates that call us to awaken at every moment. We must awaken, we must see, and then we must let go. August is here. Today is not the swan song of summer. It is a wonderful day. Summer will certainly end. The song of the hermit thrush will fade. The leaves will change and fall. And the cold rain, the sleet, the darkness, and the snow will surely follow. That is the Tao, the natural flow. It calls us to let go of the distinctions that we create, our likes and dislikes about the weather and the seasons. Every day is a wonderful day, regardless of the weather, if we embrace it fully. It calls us to practice every day, releasing ourselves from our lived mythologies, waking from our constant dream state. Life is not what we want it to be. It is just what it is. If we can come to terms with that, not by stoicism, but with full recognition and acceptance of the impermanent nature of all things, we will see the reality of the Four Noble Truths working in our lives, each and every day.
On my way here today, I saw a number of geese in a field. And I thought, beautiful geese, here so soon.
The geese always come sooner than we want them to.
You know, we sometimes talk about activism. You're talking about accepting life as it presents itself. And in context, what I shared with you in Daesan, I'm in the middle of some kind of legal thing with a client, and balancing or walking that line of what more can you do to influence change or influence a situation, and where do you let go and say this is what life's offering. And so it's just an interesting place to be.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah.
It was years of coming to Treetop that got me ready to go to Al-Anon and the serenity there. But it took a long time to get to the point where I could take that step. And so much of that is acknowledging emotions and not stuffing them down.
Yeah.
And that's very much what you're talking about. Certainly is an ongoing process.
Yeah. And if we made the serenity prayer a Buddhist, wouldn't be a prayer, a chant, then we would just take out the God. We have to do it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But we do have to figure it out.
Yeah. Just God as you understand him. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, at least for many of us, in from a Buddhist perspective, you know, just like the Atthadipa, we've got to do it ourselves. We've got to look within. We are the light. You know, the light is within.
Maybe it would be a vow.
Pardon me?
Maybe it would be a vow.
Yeah.
I haven't read his second book, but his second book is Power of Vow, and I just sent it to you, Peter, on your Facebook. Daryl Littlejohn, the Serenity Prayer, the whole recovery thing, he's the one they're calling in the Buddhist circles the 12-step Buddhist, because he took the Serenity Prayer in 12 steps and put it in the Buddhist tradition. Very, very interesting guy. I sat with him once. I wish I could have sat with him more. And I just wish I could think how he was doing the Serenity Prayer. Because he does it a whole different
way. It's not
Herb Echo Deer, is it?
No. I sent it to Peter. It's on his Facebook, Jamie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sent it yesterday. The book was really, really well done. I was amazed. And he teaches really well. Because it's that whole God thing, you know.
I've been, it's going to be a struggle to get beyond ramble on this thing. But,
wouldn't have it any other way, Dan.
I'll start with spend some time with the Heart Sutra. And I really, there's this little thing, all dharma is a form of emptiness.
All
dharma
is what?
All dharma is a form of emptiness. Yeah. And I keep, I don't know, riffing on that or whatever. And so much of it is, I went riding with with a group the other day. I've been riding alone, but I went out with a group, and I'm bringing up all my Walter Mitty competitiveness stuff. And who's that guy over there, and who's that guy over there, and who's that woman over there? Man, she's good. Why can't I keep up with her? And there's all that suffering. Jeez. I need to be that. You know. And there's a dharma of Zen. You know, there's a dharma of, you know, just the little dharma of Zen. You know, this stuff. You know. We don't talk too much in Zen. We don't, you know, I think my history and, well, the teachers up there, and they, you know, they're doing their thing that, basically, we don't say too much, and we elevate the, you know, the senior people in the group. And what is this? What is that? How do we? And the challenge for every damn one of these things is, how do I come back to this, and how do I drop those things, and how do I live this moment? So I'm incredibly grateful for all of those. I love the biking. I love little Zen, even that little competitive, you know, shtick of Zen, you know, with all of that stuff. You know, that has its appealing moments. But all dharma is a form of emptiness. You know, the Dharma of Bloomer, the incredible constellation of of foolishness and okayness that I am
here.
It's that suffering, and it's that just falling away from that, you know, and it's that sexy stuff. There's that addictive stuff, there's that scary and painful stuff.
And isn't all of that stuff?
What about that?
It's right here.
All dharma is a form of emptiness. How do you mean? I'm sorry, it's here.
I mean,
when you're
in that competitive stuff, right here.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I'm actually there. I'm completely there. And sometimes I'm completely in that misery, and that, you know, that's
kind
of
me being me. And
know?
Waking up in that moment to that misery,
yeah,
or to that.
I'd just be. Yeah, I'm not
going to
do that.
Okay. I'm just saying that's what.
No, I understand.
I understand what you're saying,
but I don't think. I'm trying not to get there in a way. There's no answer. I don't think there's an answer. You know, it's just, I gotta pay attention.
That's right.
You know, I will always be that.
I think it's just waking up to that moment, whatever that moment is.
Alright. Good. You got it.
For me.
Always. But I'll always be foolish.
Is this what we call dharma combat?
They don't have the big sticks. Where are the big sticks?
One right there.
I just didn't know.
No, I'm always, yeah. I, no,
Dharma combat, we grunt and fart and do all this.
You put a new meaning on what my husband says I do all the time. Is there a caboose to this train? I love it.
Yeah.
I really love it.
Yeah.
Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to enlighten them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable.